This week's episode of Pro Football Weekly's Chicago Football Podcast is brought to you by Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw. Use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W. You're going to get $3 off your first crate. And the November crate is winding down your last week to get this one. It's really cool. Loot Crate has got 100% exclusive items in this crate. Some cool memorabilia from the movies that are out now. Doctor Strange and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. If you were watching the Cubs World Series, if you're watching TV, period, you've seen tons of previews for these movies. They look outstanding. I'm really excited to go see them. And if you go get a Loot Crate and you can use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to get $3 off, you get some exclusive items about those two movies as well as Big Trouble in Little China. So again, go to lootcrate.com/Shaw. Use our promo code, get $3 off your first crate. It's time to talk some Bears. And welcome to PFW's Chicago Football Podcast. We are back from a extended break of sorts, and we got a lot to talk about in today's show, including a Bears victory that happened almost two weeks ago now, and an upcoming Bears game in Tampa Bay. My name is Kevin Fishbane. I am your host. You can follow me on Twitter at KFishbane. Follow all of our Bears coverage at Bears_insider and online at ProFootballWeekly.com/Bears. Joined by both producers today, Dan Mott, follow him at Mott's Thoughts, and John Sally back in the saddle at J Sally. John Sally joins us. He is now a father. John, this is your first podcast with us as a dad, so congratulations.
Thank you. I'm going on about 30 minutes of sleep, but I just want to say that since my son has been born, the Bears are undefeated and the Cubs won the World Series. That is all my son knows.
Good luck, baby,
right? The Bears win football games against the top teams in the NFL. And that the Cubs win the World Series.
And that's all that happened in the world for Henry in Henry's first couple
of
weeks.
We're sticking to sports with the 2 week
old. Sports. That's all. So again, I do apologize for our little break. We took a bye along with the Bears. We were also putting together a commemorative Cubs magazine. You should go check that out. ShawURL.com/CubsWin. Go order your commemorative Cubs World Series champion magazine. And guys, before we get to the Bears, because we actually haven't even talked about the Bears' big win over the Vikings, I got to mention that we really deserve some credit for what the Cubs did, because Cubs-Giants NLDS, that late game. You guys remember we were in studio and we were all tired and they lost and we were kind of bummed. And that night they had that great comeback victory to clinch the series. And then skip ahead the next week, it's the NLCS, and we have the podcast, and they had just lost. I believe they had lost game three, was it? So they had gone down 2-1, and we were kind of bummed, and we said, well, we'll see. They're playing tonight. They win again. And then the next week, the World Series, the Cubs lose to the Indians. We're in studio. We're doing the podcast to say, we'll see what happens tonight. They came back, and they got a W. So Theo, Jed, Joe, Rizzo, Grandpa Ross, on behalf of PFW Chicago Football Podcast, you're welcome. Do you guys think we get rings? Do we get anything for this?
Can we talk to Theo about this?
We can get him on the pod. What's a better chance? We get Theo on the pod or we get Jay Cutler on the podcast?
Theo.
Theo probably is. So on this show, we will talk to Roy Cummings to get you set for Bears-Buccaneers on Sunday. Hallis Hall has been packed this week because the Cubs are done, so the TV stations are back here. You know, Bulls and Blackhawks still pretty early in the season. And look, this is a very happy locker room, guys. You would never guess this team is 2-6. I mean, they felt so good that they got the win over Minnesota on primetime television. It was a dominant win. I mean, on both sides of the football. It really surprised a lot of us that they played that well, running the football against a really good Vikings front seven. They protected the football. They protected Jay Cutler. And on defense, they played outstanding football, and they closed out the game. You know, I went back to that fourth quarter drive. You know, the game was pretty much in hand, and Jordan Howard, 10-yard run, 6-yard run, 5-yard run. To get chunk runs like that without Josh Sitton, without Kyle Long, incredibly impressive. So you can understand why the Bears are excited. They get that win. They come back from the bye, and all players like in their bye week. They got a full week off. And then look who's back. Kyle belongs back. Josh Sitton, Eddie Royal, Eddie Goldman, Bryce Callahan. Marquise Wilson could be activated to the roster. He was back at practice this week. So you get all those guys back. You're healthy. You've seen you are capable of winning games against good teams. And you look at the stretch here at Tampa, which we will talk about at length, at New York Giants, home against the Titans, home against the awful 49ers. There's an opportunity, John, right there for them to go. There's an opportunity for them to go 4-0. There's an opportunity for them to go 3-1. I think anything short of 2-2 would be a big disappointment the way that they're feeling right now.
And Kevin, I think when you look at the standings too, the other reason for optimism is that the rest of the division has come back to the Bears. Minnesota 5-3, Detroit 5-4, Green Bay 4-4. Not exactly world beaters, and the Bears just beat Minnesota to drop them to give them another loss. So I think there are reasons for optimism. Now, I think we ought to temper expectations a little bit. The Bears are not going to all of a sudden go win the division, but there are more reasons for optimism than a couple weeks ago, and that's, you know, you just need to take a look at the standings for that. They're only, what, three games out of first. Again, I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, it's suddenly within the realm of possibility for a team that was, you know, pretty down in the dumps.
And, hey, they have, they have the tiebreaker in the division right
they
now.
They do.
When you look at it, and they get a chance with all three of these teams again. You know, you get Green Bay at home, and that team's offense is completely out of sorts. And it's funny, after the Indianapolis game, which was a really tough loss for them, remember Alshon Jeffrey said, he goes, look, we're 1-0 in the division. You know, who knows? The division's still up for grabs. And a couple of us kind of rolled our eyes and laughed a little bit. And then they go beat Minnesota, and as you mentioned, the division's falling apart. So, there's an opportunity for them to at least, you want, with this Bears team, we got to set the bar low, right? You want them to be relevant. You would love for them to be playing relevant football games in the month of December. And they actually did last year after that win over the Packers, but then they lost those back-to-back home games against San Francisco and Washington. So now it's how do you build now? How do you build off the momentum from the Vikings win, feeling as confident? Because if you go into Tampa, a team that's 0-4 at home, it's giving up 29 points a game. They're banged up, and then you lose with all your guys back. Then you're back at square one. You're 2-7, and you got to travel to New York to face a pretty solid New York Giants team. And then you're looking at 2-8, and then suddenly everyone leaves and no one cares about you again. So I think this team understands that. You know, Jay Cutler, we're recording this on Thursday, talked a lot about wanting the locker room and how this is a different locker room in terms of the guys, and it's what kind of convinces him that they can build off this momentum. So we'll see what kind of game plan they have for Tampa Bay. And John, I don't know if you were able to stay up for the game because you had the little baby guy hanging out and whatnot, but I thought that offensive game plan that Dow Loggins put together, at least for 1 week, silenced a lot of the doubters about what he can do as a coordinator.
So those of you that have been or are new parents know that you're not on your schedule when that's going on, and at that point, the boy was a week old. So I had not been watching the game, and I got a text from a friend. And the game happened to be on Halloween, if I remember correctly. And
yep.
He said, the Bears decided to dress up as a real football team for Halloween. So I decided, okay, well, let's check in. And all of a sudden, they're just dominating the Vikings. So it was a really impressive performance from top to bottom. It was definitely not the Bears team that I expected to see or had seen for the past few weeks. So, again, that feeds into those reasons for optimism that this team does look a little bit different, and they've got a plum matchup against the Bucs defense that is vulnerable through the air. I think you're going to see Alshon Jeffrey potentially go off as if we would stray into fantasy territory for a second. He's one of the best fantasy wide receivers, I think, for the week, because with Cutler, he's going to throw to Alshon. I think they're going to get on the same page. I don't think you're going to see a ball bounce off of Alshon's head. At least I hope not. But I think that there's a lot of optimism for this game specifically and the rest of the schedule moving forward.
There is. And as you said, it starts with Tampa. They've actually beaten Tampa each of the last two seasons. They beat him at home 2 years ago when they beat Josh McCown and Lovie Smith in a really ugly, ugly game. And then they won last year in Tampa, I think it was right after Christmas, and it was a really good game. Harold Jones-Corte, that was kind of his coming out party, and the defense played well. And this is an opportunity for them to get back in the winning column. But we like to always bring you guys the information from the other team, the opponent make sure that when you're watching on Sunday on Fox at noon, you know everything there is to know about the Buccaneers. So to do so, we talked to Roy Cummings. He's covered the Buccaneers for a long time, a Pro Football Weekly correspondent. You can follow him on Twitter at rcummings, F-R-S. He writes for FanRag Sports, Florida Football Insiders, and he's the WFLA News Channel 8 Bucks Insider. Let's go behind enemy lines with Roy Cummings. Roy, I want to start kind of with the obvious player, at least the one that most Bears fans would know best, and that's Jameis Winston. Where do you think Jameis has improved in year two? And then the follow-up to that would be, where do you think he's maybe regressed or plateaued after his rookie season?
Yeah, the improvement is actually pretty easy to identify. He's really become, and I don't think too many scouts, in fact, I don't know if any scouts saw this happening, but he's become a pretty good weapon outside of the pocket on the rollout. Just making decisions out there. I mean, his completion percentage out there, he's 30 of 50, 60% solid. Not spectacular, but solid. But he's thrown 10 touchdown passes outside of the pocket. Tops in the league right now. So he's really improved in terms of making plays on the run, rolling out, seeing the field better. Not afraid to, you know, to throw back against the grain, so to speak, but very sharp outside of the pocket for the most part. Makes big plays out there. I think they use it mostly down in the red zone in that area where the running threat forces the defense to kind of come up and maybe freeze them a little bit or as I said, come up and maybe try to make a tackle on him, and then he finds the open guy. So he's really improved in that regard. And again, he was a little bit pudgy a year ago, certainly in college. I don't think a lot of scouts saw him becoming much of an outside-the-pocket presence. But right now, he's not Russell Wilson, but he can challenge just about anybody else in terms of making plays out there. So he's been very, very good at that. In terms of regression, I think the Buccaneers thought they were well past the situation with decision-making overall with him in the second half of last year when he threw just 8 interceptions in the last 12 games. He really, it was almost like, literally like he just flipped a switch. He had that horrible game against Carolina where he threw 4, and he kind of came off of that saying, I just can't do this anymore. It's almost like, somebody trying to quit smoking. It's it's a bad habit, a hard habit to break, but at the end of the day, he did it. And I think Dirk Cutter said, I thought we were past this because he started off this year the same way. 8 interceptions actually against 8 touchdown passes in the first 4 games. But since then, he's really improved in that regard as well. But that was an area where he clearly regressed. And it was really not his throwing mechanics, although that's still a work in progress. It was just his mentality. He is a gunslinger. He's a Brett Favre type. He thinks he can make every throw, and sometimes he tries too hard to make every throw, and he needs to be a little bit smart about where he goes. So there was some regression in terms of his mentality and how he needs to throw the ball in certain situations and not throw it in certain situations. And there was some regression there. But since in the last few weeks, he's kind of picked that up as well. So he seems to be on the right path here.
And we'll get to the run game that complements Jameis in a second, but I want to talk about those receivers. And I think Mike Evans, I mean, you may be the best player on the entire Bucs team, and I imagine that the Bears are going to put Tracy Porter on him. That's usually what Chicago does against opponents that have a clear number one receiver. What have you seen other teams try to do to contain Evans, and does anything work against a guy with that kind of catch radius?
Yeah, you see a lot of bracketing, obviously. There's been it's hard to really put a focus on him because one of the things the Bucs do well with Mike Evans is they move him around. He'll be the X one play, he'll be the Z another play, he'll stick him in the slot. They move him around a lot, so it's hard to just put one guy on him, which I think has helped him a little bit. But he's not afraid to get the safety. He's not afraid of that safety help that the cornerbacks get because he kind of likes to get physical. I think the way to get to him is, it used to be, at least up until this year, the way to get to him was to just keep, hand fighting him, just jab him and get him off his game, because he was quick to kind of get frustrated with that when the flags didn't come, and he was quick to, start calling for penalties and things like that, and it really affected him last year. But he's matured in that way. I think he's come to realize that, look, There's just a lot of hand fighting in particular that's going to go on as you run your route down the field, and a lot of it's not going to get called, and you just have to try to be smart about it and hope that, more often than not, you get the calls. But if you don't, move on to the next play and make the catch. I mean, physically, you're right. I mean, he's so imposing as it is, 6'5" plus, and, big, he's a big guy to begin with, the catch radius, the long arms. And that's one thing James Winston has taken advantage of. He's learned through quarterback coach Mike Bajakian to throw a tall guy a tall ball, is how he says it. And so he's not afraid to throw those alley-oops up there and say, all right, go get it. If you get a cornerback who's 6'5" to take him on, well, he's got a pretty good challenge there. But you don't see too many quarterbacks 6'5", so he wins most of those jump ball battles.
And I guess there's really one simple way to ask this. Who are these other guys that Jameis Winston has to throw to?
Well, I'll tell you what, Adam Humphries is a pretty good football player. Yeah. He'll surprise a lot of people. He's a slot guy. The Bucs liken him to a Julian Edelman type. They think he's kind of, he's a tough kid. But he came out of Clemson, and he was kind of behind some pretty good receivers there the last couple of years at Clemson, so he didn't get drafted. He was undrafted. The Bucs brought him in, got an opportunity when Lewis Murphy got hurt last year, and really just took advantage of it. So a pretty good slot option there. Russell Shepard is a guy who he's a tremendous athlete, might be the best athlete on the Bucs squad. Actually, he was a quarterback in high school. He got recruited to LSU. They turned him into a receiver. He's become a special teams ace with the Buccaneers, but as a pass catcher, he's pretty good. He's really developed, and he's got a pretty good rapport with Jameis Winston as well. Beyond that, I mean, everybody's heard of Cecil Shorts, but Cecil just really struggling to figure things out. I swear to God, every time I look at him in the locker room, he's staring at the playbook trying to figure it out. It just seems to be coming slow for him right now. It hasn't shown up on the field really at all. And then the tight end, another undrafted kid out of Harvard, Cameron Brate. And again, a nice player, good enough to kind of push Austin Seferian Jenkins into a position where it's like, look, if this guy can't get his act together, which he didn't, we're going to move on and let him go. And they did. So, it's pretty much a no-name receiving core outside of Evans, but now that Vincent Jackson's hurt, but not a bad receiving. There's a lot of talent there, a lot of guys just kind of, under the radar that had some skills, and they're adapting pretty well to the NFL pace, so that's what they've been leaning on.
That sound you hear, Roy, is people frantically trying to find these guys for their fantasy teams, because the Bears' pass defense numbers are good, but they're pretty thin in that secondary, a lot of young players. I want to get to the run game now. We're taping this on Tuesday. I know there was no Doug Martin Monday, so first off would be, what's kind of your sense of Doug Martin, and then without Martin, if he's not going to play Sunday, what can folks expect from that Bucs rushing attack?
Yeah, I would say go back and look at the tape of their game last week against Atlanta. That's probably what you're going to get. A lot of Peyton Barber, who's an undrafted rookie out of Auburn, who can play a little bit. He's more of a power back, which is what the Bucs like to run because they want to run it between the tackles. Anton Smith is hurt, so they'll bring up Russell Hansbrough and another undrafted rookie out of Missouri, who kind of a third down back, but he might have to do some things. And then they got Mike James, who kind of is a little bit of a fullback slash halfback kind of hybrid kind of guy. He can do a lot of things, catch the ball a little bit. He's got a little more experience in the system, probably a running back by committee type situation. I mean, they'll go with a hot hand if someone gets hot, but my guess will be that they'll probably just go with the committee approach if Doug can't come back. And I got to be honest, I think the situation with Doug Martin is I don't think Doug Martin feels like he's ready to come back. I think there might be a little bit of a push from the organization to try to get him back because they are down on so many numbers. And this is a team that's had 7 running backs on the roster. They've started 4. It's really the foundation of their offensive attack. So they really want to see him come back if he can. And but I think Doug is just trying to make sure that he's 100% before he does. And so Wednesday will be a big day for the Buccaneers. If he's out there in practice, he's got a shot at playing. I think if he's not, though, I think you got to just believe that they're going to go with that committee approach with the kids and see what they can get out of them.
Let's flip to the defensive side of the ball. I would hope Bears fans, or football fans at least, know of Gerald McCoy and Levante David. What about some of the other guys in that front seven? I know Noah Spence was a guy I kind of liked coming into the draft. Who are some of the other guys in that front group, D linemen and linebackers, that folks should kind of can monitor on Sunday?
Well, the one that everybody probably does know, maybe lost track of, is Robert Ayers. He came from the Giants, led them in sacks last year with nine and a half, I guess it was, and came here, and then he got hurt, and he's missed four games. He just came back a couple of weeks ago, but hasn't done much, still trying to come back from a high ankle sprain. The other guy to notice or to take note of is Will Golston. He was a Michigan State product, and again, when the Bucs drafted him, he was a third-round pick, but he's still kind of a developmental guy. And he's finally found what he does best, which is a run stopper on the left side. But he's got a little bit of pass rush ability, and he can move inside and play tackle. So he's a pretty versatile player and a pretty valuable one. He just doesn't make a lot of splash plays. He's just kind of a solid, steady presence, sets the edge pretty well on that side. And those are the two that probably deserve the most credit for this defense when it has played well, playing at a high level. The other guys, as you mentioned, Noah Spence, trying to figure things out. I mean, he's certainly got the pass rush skill, but he's just not big enough right now, not stout enough to be an every down player. So he's not in there very much on passing, on rushing downs, I should say. And the other way around, Clinton McDonald has been hurt, and Akeem Spence, there's another guy. Akeem Spence is the nose tackle, a pretty good football player, just doesn't get a lot of notoriety because, again, the splash plays usually end up being made by somebody else. But this is a guy who's starting to develop the ability to draw a double team. He can certainly beat a single block. Pretty good football player, makes tremendous penetration skills. So he's got the ability to get into the backfield and create some havoc. So they've got talent there. It just hasn't all come together. And talking to the Bucs this week, it seems like communication is the issue. I mean, Levante David not playing anywhere near the all-pro, Pro Bowl level of Levante David that we've come to know the last two, three, 4 years. Just really slow to kind of figure out what apparently is a very complex Mike Smith defense. I guess we're just now starting to find out why they were so adamant about bringing in Brent Grimes, bringing in Daryl Smith, a couple of older guys that knew the scheme, because I guess they knew that they were going to need players that understood the scheme and could help teach it, because it's apparently quite complex. Because right now the problem the Bucs are having defensively is not the talent. I mean, there's talent there. You said it. I mean, you've got a Pro Bowler, Gerald McCoy, Levante David, Quan Alexander was a Rookie of the Year candidate last year. You've got Vernon Hargraves, Brent Grimes, 3-4-time Pro Bowler. You got players out there. But right now they just don't get this system very well, and it seems like, talk about regression, that's one area where they have regressed. I think they thought they had it about 2-3 weeks ago when they were winning in San Francisco, winning in Carolina, where they were giving up just 17, 18 points a game. But it seems like they've forgotten what they learned since then, because they've really been struggling. So, again, the talent's there. It's just right now it's just not gelling the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk to you about that pass defense, because obviously the numbers aren't very good. I think they're third worst in the league in opponent passer rating. And you say Grimes and Hargraves. I mean, they have the veterans back there. They have guys who can rush the passer. So, you know, what are some of the issues that some of the other issues you see there? And also, how do you see that going up against, you know, Jay Cutler, now Sean Jeffrey, and a Bears passing game is starting to get a little healthier?
Yeah, it's an issue for them because they've got to start developing that pass rush. And again, with Ayers back now, and he may not be 100%, he's playing on a high ankle sprain as it is. Maybe he's not quite humming the way he should be. McCoy, he's coming off a couple of injuries as well, missed a couple of games. So they've had, you know, injuries have been part of the issue. If you look at the big overall numbers, I would say injuries are more than anything are part of the problem there. But I say that, because not just has Gerald McCoy missed time, not just has Robert Ayers missed time, Noah Spence rather played at least two games with a dislocated shoulder, and that slowed him down. But this team lost in week one its best pass rusher, Jacquees Smith, a little-known guy. Bucks picked him up a couple of years ago off waivers from Buffalo. He's their best pass rusher. They're outside of McCoy. I mean, McCoy's special. But as an end, he's their best pass rusher. And when he's on the left side and on passing downs, there's no question. Teams have to pick their poison. You're going to have double-team somebody, probably three guys. If Ayers is out there, if Spence is out there, if McCoy is out there, if Jacquees Smith is out there, you've got to double team at least two of those guys. And if you don't, somebody's going to get through. And they just haven't had a chance to play with that unit. They're not going to because Smith is out for the season. They're trying to get to a situation now where they could at least have McCoy, Ayers, and Noah Spence in the lineup at the same time. If they can do that and get those guys playing well, they could become a force with the pass rush, but it's just a matter of time. And the question is, you know, is 10 days off from the Thursday game enough time for these guys to get healthy and find that rhythm? We'll find out. The likelihood, though, is that it's going to take a couple more weeks and may not even happen before the season's out if anybody else goes down. So it's been a tough issue for them in terms of injuries, particularly at defensive end, and that's what's really hurt their pass rush.
Well, Roy, it'll be weakness versus weakness on Sunday because the Bears are 31st in the league in scoring points, and the Bucs obviously give up a lot of points, a lot of yards through the air. I'll wrap up with this. If there's an area of this game, offense, defense, special teams, that you think can flip the script, whether it's in the Bucs' favor or the Bears' favor, kind of be the X factor, what are you going to be watching for on Sunday?
I think it's the Bucs' ability to run the ball. If they can somehow get their running game going, that just gives Jameis Winston a lot more confidence. It allows them to get the play-action passing game working, which is where Jameis is really at his best. He's completing like 75% of his passes off play-action, so he's been very solid there. I think it's the running game. Even with these unknowns, if they can somehow get a rushing game, rushing attack built up, just to you know, for the defense in Chicago to have to just pay some kind of respect to it, it's going to help Jameis Winston. And if Jameis Winston's got that as a foundation, he'll make good throws with the ball in his hand and make good decisions. And that should help the Bucs a lot. So I think it's the Bucs' running game.
I'll throw a bonus one your way, Roy, since we're obviously in Chicago here. Do any of the reporters miss Lovie Smith around the Lovie Smith press conferences?
No, we do not miss Lovie. I'll tell you what, we loved Lovie when he was here as a linebackers coach. Everybody was excited when he came back. It just didn't work out. We certainly don't miss the press conferences. No, not at all. Not when you got Dirk Cutter, who's a tell-it-like-it-is kind of guy. No, we don't miss Lovie's press conferences at all. Miss Lovie because he's a great guy. I don't think anybody misses his defense, though, and certainly don't miss the press conferences.
There you go. Roy Cummings, follow him on Twitter, at rcummings, F-R-S, for some Bucks insight this week, leading up to Bears Buccaneers. Roy, thanks so much for the insight.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Big thank you to Roy Cummings breaking down the Buccaneers, and a reminder to tell you about another sponsor of ours, Fan Essentials. How would you like to get all your favorite NFL teams merchandise delivered right to your doorstep? Go check out fanessentials.net. You pick out your favorite sports team, and every month you get teams gear shipped right to your door. I imagine if you are a Cubs fan, you should sign up for this. And if you do so and you go to fanessentials.net, use the promo code Chicago at checkout. You get 30% off your first month. Prices start at just $34.99, and you can get all the Fan Essentials you need for your favorite team. FanEssentials.net. Use our promo code Chicago. So interesting stuff from Roy Cummings. I think he kind of, I don't want to use the word painted necessarily, but he described a team that is much more talented than their record. And I think that is definitely something to say about the defense. And John, we talked about the numbers in the defense are bad, but then you look at the personnel, you see Gerald McCoy up front. Jay Cutler immediately singled McCoy out today as the guy to watch on that team. You talk about Levante David, who Roy said is having a tough year, but you know what he's capable of. And that secondary's got veterans in Brent Grimes and Vernon Hargraves. I mean, there are some game wreckers in that defensive front for Tampa Bay. That it's a reminder that Jay Cutler has to continue to play efficient football. Trust Jordan Howard, trust the run game, trust Alshon Jeffrey. And this is a team with a slim margin of error. And there are guys in that Bucs team that can create turnovers.
Yeah, Gerald McCoy, when you take a look at that Bucs roster, that's the one guy that can just blow up every game plan you have. So the Bears absolutely have to find a way to neutralize McCoy because he's going to find a way to get his. But if they can limit what he does, and keep Cutler clean, then the Bears have a realistic shot of going into Tampa and winning this thing.
Yeah, and we'll get to our picks later in the show, but it was almost unanimous in our inserts, which you can pick up in Thursday, Sun-Times, Daily Herald, and Northwest Herald, which broke down all of our picks. A lot of people jumping on the Bears. And look, when you're around this team, there is some bias because you see what they did in Minnesota. You see how confident they are. And Tampa, they get some extra rest. They're coming off a Thursday night game. So, you know, they're going to be feeling better. You know, they're going to be healthier. They might get Doug Martin back, but they did not look good against Atlanta. They have not looked good in a couple of weeks. And here's the thing, guys, it's weakness versus weakness. The Bears are bad in the red zone. It's something they worked on during the bye week. The Bucs are bad defending the red zone. The Bears can get those touchdowns when they're in there, which we've been talking about all year. It's going to be huge for them. And kind of an X factor of sorts to watch in this game would be Eddie Royal if he's able to return, because this is a guy that was really productive for this Bears offense when he was healthy. It looks like he's going to be back in the lineup, missed a couple games of that toe injury, and just Jay Cutler says it gives him another option up the seam, another option on third down. Guys, I want to do a little tangent here for a moment if you'll indulge. Not television shows, but I do want to get back to the Cubs. Because we talked about the Cubs a lot on the show this month. You two are big Cub fans. I'm a big Cub fan. It meant a lot to all of us. And, you know, John, for you to be there with your baby Henry. Dan, I know you watch with your dad. I just want to give you guys the opportunity to talk about what it felt like when Chris Bryant, with his golden smile and sparkly eyes, fielded that ball, made the play, Cubs World Series champs.
It was it was incredible. And in fact, you know, I will say, leading up to it, you know, I had this conversation with some of my friends and wondered, you know, would I actually shed physical tears if it happened? Because being a lifelong Cub fan and growing up with the Cubs and going to games with my dad when I was younger and you know, even today, like, there's just so much more than just baseball there. It was so much more of, you know, these memories, these fond memories of generations and all of this stuff. And I thought, would I actually shed tears if they won? And I actually, it wasn't until I was on my way home that night and I was listening to a lot of the post-game stuff that it actually hit me. And I literally, like, I just found myself started, like, bawling because I was just like, this is absolutely incredible. And it was just, it's a night I will truly never forget. As a Cubs fan, and I hope that we have an opportunity to celebrate several more years like that.
For me, it was incredibly surreal and special. You know, to go through the birth of your first child, and then 10 days later, you know, the team that you have followed forever winning, you know, the first World Series in 108 years. It truly is surreal. I had been holding the boy for most of the game, and he had actually been sleeping for most of the game. So there's a whole lot of yes, like just really quiet, you know, and like minor fist pumps, and you know, I'd been texting with some friends and my dad throughout the game as well. And then a little later in the game, my wife said, "You know what? I think you're gonna get emotional and start reacting a little bit more. I'm just going to take the baby." So she held the baby, and she was so stressed out. She's a Cubs fan too. She was so stressed out about it that she was actually upstairs and not watching until she heard me celebrate, and then came down and a big old group hug and tears and kisses. And it was just, it was that magical moment that we had all been waiting for a very long time.
It was a special night. It was a special week. I think anybody who grows up in a family that followed the Cubs is just different than any other sports team. I posted this. You guys, I've talked about my Bubby on this show, and you guys have heard my stories about Bubby, and she and I are texting throughout the games. And I'll just tell a quick story about, so my Bubby and my Pops met. They had their first date at a Cubs game. It was 4th of July, 1954. And they've had Cubs tickets in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and a little bit in the 2000s. So I went to games with them a lot growing up, including the 50th anniversary of that first date, which happened to be a Cubs walk-off win over the White Sox. So it meant a lot to the two of them, and that they kind of brought our whole family up in Cubs. You know, religion's not a big thing in our family unless you're talking about the Cubs. And my Pops, unfortunately, is not at a point in his life where he could really – grasp what was happening and kind of understand it. And I watched game six with him to try to see if it was going to conjure up any memories or anything. And he just smiled and enjoyed the game. That was a little sad for me, but my bubby was just so into it. And she's texting me constantly. She's 79 years old, just, you know, about the game throughout and seeing how happy she was. Other friends, parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts. That was a special thing. And it was a lot of fun. And after the Cubs won, nothing else happened in the world. All that happens is the Cubs won the World Series. That's all we have to talk about. And I can then plug, again, go check out our Cubs book, commemorative book, 108 pages, one for each year we've had to wait for a Cubs World Series. They're only $12.99. ShawMedia.com/Cubs. You can go order that magazine. Really wonderful column to open it from Hub Arcus. So thanks to you guys for sharing your stories and to our listeners for indulging in that and my story. And let's get back to the Bears and let's go to our picks. Bears at Buccaneers. I will be there in Tampa Bay on Sunday. Go ahead and add Bears_Insider on Snapchat. Actually, the first time I ever used Snapchat stories was in Tampa last year for Bears Bucks. I didn't really know how to do it, but now I have a better grasp of it. So if you want to see what it's like on the beaches, 80 degrees in Tampa on Sunday in Raymond James Stadium, go ahead, add that on Snapchat. And, you know, while I'm in the state of Florida, I might have some words with some folks down there about the world. Or maybe I'll just stick to sports and stick to football. Regardless, Dan Mott.
I'd stay away. They do bath salts in Florida. You're
probably right.
You're going to get your face bitten off. And yeah, I don't want that because it's a nice looking face.
I'm just being a big city media elitist. But you're right. I'll just stick to covering Bears Buccaneers. Dan Mott, Bears Bucks Sunday, who you got?
I'm going to go with Bears. I hope that they don't let me down. I'm going to go Bears. And I'm going to say that it's a low-scoring game, and I'm going to say Bears 14. And let's go Bucks 12.
All right. John Solly.
I see this as a high-scoring game. I think there's going to be a lot of throwing, a lot of plays get off in this game. I'm going to say Bears 29. Bucks 28. Bears pull out a 1-point win.
All right. Well, the Bears are 1.5-point favorites, last I checked. Just for those of you keeping score at home, Hub has Bears 27, Bucks 24. I like that 29 number, John. I also went Bears 29, Bucks 23. This is, I don't like to put a ton of stock in confidence. And kind of the mental part when you're handicapping a game. But I think there's something to be said about how healthy the Bears are and how good they about what they were able to accomplish against Minnesota. They feel they could do that against Tampa Bay, a team that's really struggling on defense. And I think the Bears front seven on the defensive side of their football is really coming together, and that's going to be a strength for them going up against Jameis Winston. We didn't even talk about Pernell McPhee and Leonard Floyd, how well they played against Minnesota, and those two should continue to get better with the pass rush as the season goes along. So all of us picked the Bears. Be sure to check out all of our Bears content leading up to the game, profootballweekly.com/Bears, and on Twitter at Bears_Insider. That'll do it for this week's episode of the PFW Chicago Football Podcast. Thank you again for listening and waiting a week to hear from us and hear about our memories and what it felt like when the Cubs won the World Series. Big thank you, of course, to Loot Crate, our sponsor this week. Go ahead and subscribe on iTunes. Look up the PFW Chicago Podcast. Subscribe there and give us a 5-star rating while you are at it. Big thank you, of course, for my producers, Dan Mott, and new father, John Solly. I'm Kevin Fishbane. Have a great weekend. Enjoy Bears Bucks and more Bears talk next week.